Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 210 for January 14th, 2019. If you have not had a chance to take a look at today's report yet, it's number 277, and you should be seeing it on your screen while I'm talking, but you can also go to timingresearch.com to either look at the web or PDF version of the report. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but I'm also making the audio-only podcast version of all episodes available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. So just search for Timing Research and subscribe there. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research, and I have Dave Landry back to moderate today. So I'm going to turn it over to him.
Thank you, David Cosmeter, and thank you to Timing Research for once again having me back. Glad to be here. Looks like we have some veterans here today. At least we're waiting on one veteran, but I recognize Jim Kinney over there from Option Professor. While we're waiting on Neil, Jim, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about OptionProfessor.com for those of us who don't know you.
Right. As far as Option Professor, I do give the content Option Professor. We got seven option learning DVDs going over how to use options for income and cash flow, how to use them for hedging, and how to use them for a limited risk spec. I've been doing seminars for decades, and I have educated thousands and thousands of people on how the options can be used as a tool. And now we also have a podcast every Friday where I go over not only some strategies, but also the stock market, the bond market, where interest rates are going. I also go over the U.S. dollar, which is getting very interesting. And I also go over oil and gold. So that's a free podcast. And at the website, which I'll talk to about at the end of the broadcast, you can get the link to tune in each and every Friday.
Okay, cool. Well, I guess while we're waiting on Neil, I'll go ahead and chime in. My name is Dave Landry. I am the president, founder, and CEO of DaveLandry.com. I've been doing this for a very long time. Worked for, consulted with, I should say, a few hedge funds. And I was a member of a website right around the time that the internet was birthed, so to speak. I believe that you can only predict short term when it comes to markets, but you can stick around longer term just in case a big trend develops. If you're trying to predict too far out, it's kind of like predicting the weather. If it's cloudy and thundering, you know it's going to rain, but you don't know if it's going to rain this time next week or next year or whatever. But you can stick with the trend as long as it unfolds. And I believe in keeping it really simple. If you look at my website, DaveLandry.com, it says Trading Simplified. In a few minutes, I'll give you a link where you can get all three of my books for free, easy for me to say, and a couple introductory courses, one on market timing, which I think is very timely right now. But I'll give you that information in a little while. While we're still waiting on Neo to dial in with his 1200 baud modem, Jim, let's go to you.
Sure.
So I saw a comedian the other night. And he was he was talking about it. You remember that? I was like, it's like, yeah, I remember those days. Yeah. The audience really wasn't laughing. I was cracking up. Anyway, what direction, Jim, do you think the S&P will move from now until the end of the week? And rate your confidence to that answer by estimating the probability you've correctly predicted this week's market's move.
Right. Well, we're all going through the same problem process in that when you throw a ball off the Empire State Building and it drops 100 floors, it's going to have a bounce. And anybody who's got any wisdom here knows that it's very difficult to tell when it may stop bouncing. So my best guess here is it could either have already hit the high on the rebound around this 2600, and that would mean it will roll over as we go into the end of the week. You know, there's a lot of earnings coming out these weeks, particularly on the financials and the airlines, and also Netflix and Schlumberger at the end of the week. So, you know, if these things come out with disappointing and bad visibility, again, we may fall right back into the soup. The VIX is something that I watch closely. It went down towards 17-18. It's now popping out of that area. If we are going to go higher than 2600 and up towards the next resistance near 27-27.40, you're going to have to take that VIX underneath 18-17. So watch that VIX. If you get under 17 that area, then the likelihood we're going to blow out 2600 and go up to the higher resistance levels, which are 2650, 2750, would increase. But right now, it's probably not a terrible bet that this may turn over from here, because the VIX has been rising. So I would say turning over from here and 55 versus 45 would be the way I'd call the probability.
Okay. And you answered all three questions. So that's good. That's OK. okay. That's okay.
I got more. Don't worry. I got more.
All right. Good. Good. Because what I'm going to do is I'll go ahead and answer all three questions just so I don't get confused. And then if you want to, while I'm pontificating, if you want to share your screen or something and talk about the charts, because I was not looking at the VIX this morning, so I thought that was kind of interesting that he was showing that. So let me just go walk through a few things. Let's see if we get the screen shared better here. Let's see. Sorry about that. It's not working on an application. Let's see. All right, here we go. Okay, so Jim was just talking about the VIX. Let's take a look at the piece first. First of all, let me give you my prediction. I'm going to say that we're headed down, and I am going to go with about 65%. I like a lot of what Jim said. I think that I think we should see some sort of movement fairly soon in here. I think the volatility has dropped off and we're bumping up against a big wad of overhead supply. There's nothing really technical about that. It's just simply an area where people have likely bought or at least held on during that area, hoping that that was the bottom. And then they might be looking to get out of break even. Remember, at least the way I look at technical analysis, I'm just reading the psychology of the market. And I use the charts to show me that psychology. So I know there's likely either some buying in this range or some people that are likely still long. Market is very overbought. I don't really use any oscillators or indicators to show that other than eyeballing a chart. We've ran from the December lows up till recently, and that's about 7.5% run. That's a pretty big run for a market when you consider sometimes that's all the market does in an entire year. So I think we're headed back lower. If we do get back into this range, and I don't know if that's exactly what Jim was saying, but I think we would be back in the soup, so to speak. I think that's really a good way of putting it. I certainly would not become bullish until we actually busted through this range to the upside. So I'm not going to try to call the bottom. There were a lot of people that called bottoms here and here and here, and they just failed miserably. And you have to be careful because a lot of people like to predict early and often. As a trend follower, you're not going to look smart. I'm just going to follow along. And again, right now we're in a downtrend and we're very overbought. Jim, you want to add anything to that or you want to share a chart?
Guys, I think Neil is here now. Neil, are you there?
Okay. Hey, Neil.
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
Oh, fantastic. All right, Neil, let's get you up to speed. First of all, we're working on questions 1, 2, and 3. So question that I'll go ahead and ask them all three at once. What direction do you think the S&P is going to move? You know, the retain rate of confidence. And then 3 would be for your answer. Please share what specific reasons you think the S&P is headed the direction you choose. So go ahead and take over and we'll come back to you, Jim.
I'm just going to go down for the week, but not a huge confidence level, maybe, 55, 60%. And I was trying to think of this analogy of buying this week, and that would be the equivalent of you're playing blackjack and you got 17. Yeah, you're supposed to hit on 17, but do you really want to?
Or would you? Not if it's a soft 17.
I don't know what a soft 17 is. You have to tell me later. You're like, I know I'm supposed to hit, but I don't feel like it. I kind of wish I could just leave the table and wait for the next hand is kind of how I feel about the market. But one of the things that I think is really great about the market, and I don't know if it's the algorithms or the hedge funds or whatever it is that it's acting so incredibly predictably that it's fantastic and you can make a lot of money in this market. And I really hope it continues because, I mean, you're looking at this chart here. Look at these, the highs here are almost exactly the same. The bottoms are exactly the same. The bottom sells off. I mean, it's just fantastic the way it's working out. So, what was the next question, Dave?
Well, expand upon that just real quick. You were saying you like the behavior. You want to share a chart real quick, or can you kind of elaborate?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that I was already screen sharing.
Yeah, because you're making it sound like really easy. I want to make sure I'm not missing out on anything here.
Sorry, I thought that the screen share was there. Is it up now?
Yeah.
Okay, so, this is what I use for one of my main sets of analysis. This is cloud charting, and I'll just make the chart a bit bigger here. And
I'm actually not seeing it, maybe Jim was looking at my chart. Okay. There you go. You're getting there.
I'm clicking the screen share button.
Yeah, you're getting there. Getting close. You might have to share that. Screen. You may have to share the application sometimes.
Okay, so then I switch to the tab. Is it there now or no?
Yeah, it's there.
I'm seeing it.
Oh, okay. So basically you have these three highs here and then the floor. So you got the ceiling and the floor. And then as soon as it breaks down here, it just keeps going. And then you got this bullish engulfing candle and then you can get in again. And it's just working out so well. I mean, you can't, you know, when something like this happens, like this breakdown here, we got in the middle of the day right here because it was just completely obvious. And when you see something like that, you have to go for it right away. You can't really hesitate. And if you get stopped out, you get stopped out. But if you're going to be buying something and you're not quite sure, don't be afraid to get stopped out and then get back in again, because you might lose that small amount, but you could still get a huge gain. I think a lot of people are worried about getting stopped out and then they'll quit that trade altogether. But when you're going for bottoms and getting in these moves, you don't have to do that. But what I was just saying is the way the markets are moving, I think it's got to be these algorithms that are really making it pretty obvious. It's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, I know, but it's working out great. But right here, I mean, there's that expression, ceilings become floors and floors become ceilings. So here's this floor here at about 2600. And now that's right where it rallied up to. I mean, just like clockwork, you know? So, I mean, I'd certainly not be buying here, but I mean, you could get a bit of a move down to maybe 2500 and then you're sort of in no man's land. You don't know what's going to happen, but there's no such thing as this is the bottom. And oh yeah, I mean, I agree.
Quick question, Neil. Do you think the algos would kick in if we begin to sell off out of this really deep pullback? You think that, you know, because just looking at it, we had this persistent move higher. It looks like it went up day after day after day. And I'm wondering if that comes to an end, does it reverse itself and the algos go the other way?
One thing that I noticed really over the years, and I've made some mistakes in this in the past, is that when you get a big rally, I mean, we're looking here at almost 2,300 up to almost 2,600, is you can't underestimate just how much something can rally back. And I've definitely missed out on trades like that before, where you think we've got this huge move, I missed out, it couldn't possibly go anymore. But you know what? I really think it could. And just don't know. But if we then break out again here, maybe 2,610, I mean, you could get up 2,800, even 2,900. But if you don't sell at 2,900, you've got a big problem.
Yeah. That's
really what it is. Because everyone thinks, oh, now we're back to the good old times. But really, what's happening is you're getting a fantastic opportunity to get out. But if we sell off from here, we're going to be stuck around 2,500 in no man's land. That's it.
Yeah, interesting times. It's interesting you pointed that out, that even if we did get back up towards those old highs, that might just be a place where people are like, okay, I won't do that ever again. I lost a bunch of money in my 401k. I think I might need to scratch out. I know the man on the street, friends and relatives are starting to track me down. And that's usually a sign that the market could be in a little bit of trouble. I don't see it as a shoe shine boy signal, easy for me to say, but more as that the average guy is starting to wake up. And I think a lot of times the average guy just doesn't want to worry about it and gets around, when he finally gets around to opening his statements, he begins to get a little nervous. Neil, before we forget, since you were a little late, I'd forgotten to ask for you to introduce yourself for those of us who don't know you. Neil's a good friend of the show. We love to have him on, obviously. But for those of us who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself and TraderReview.com.
Sure. Dave knows this story, so I won't be on it this time. But I used to be a broker at a big firm, and it was great because I was right out of college and I got a lot of free meals from the mutual fund companies that pitch their products. And one of the guys from the only thing I remember from any mutual fund presentation was, this was in 1999, and he was a huge internet bull guy, and people asked him, where do you see the future of all this technology stuff? And you know what he said? I'll never forget. He said, Amazon will be the largest market capitalization company in the world, and Barnes and Noble will be a coffee stand. And you know what? Amazon is now the largest market capitalization company in the world. And he predicted that 19 years ago. But that was the only good pick I got out of those lunches.
I was getting ready to say, I wouldn't expect you to say that, because usually you talk about you use two words that I've been using quite often in more recent times. And I think you know what those are. Your job is broker. Not being. Yeah. What's a job as a broker?
Asset gatherer.
I've been quoting you quite often on that. When people are asking me, it's like, well, you know, when I call my dude, he's probably going to, I say, when you call your dude, he's probably going to try to stick you, keep you in and all, because he's an asset gatherer. But good words there.
And another one is, you're not a financial advisor, David. You know what you are?
What?
Financial counselor.
Counselor. Oh, I got you.
So that's when the market goes down 60% like it did in 2008. And all you do is you just hold your client's hand and you say, everything's going to be okay. Just try. But you know what? The central banks bailed out everybody. They'll do it again forever. And, you know, the good thing about a broker, in my opinion, is they will never let you sell at the bottom. At least that is probably a greater advantage, but they will never sell in the bull market ever.
Yeah.
I didn't like, there was no financial strategy to my job necessarily. The last thing I did before, a client will be the most upset if you sell too early. You could lose all the money. They won't be nearly as upset as if you sell the stuff too early and it doesn't.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You will lose that client. There's no doubt about it. So that's another reason why brokers never sell.
Yeah, and there's a lot of you're not gonna lose your job if you're a fund manager. That is, and you're a benchmark is the S&P 500.
Yeah.
If you sell out and the S&P goes 10% higher, even though you should have gotten out the way, you're gonna lose your job. So I guess that's the same. That's an analogy. And you know, one thing that's interesting is I get this from Greg Morris. You always get a lot of good stuff out of him. He used to run about $5 billion, but Greg said the buy and hold time horizons are based on an 81 year time horizon. And I actually do a little presentation where I have Sweet Brown pop up and say, ain't nobody got time for that. So it's pretty amazing stuff. And you know, what I can't fathom is why people won't just go look at 2000 and 2007 and notice that the market lost half its value afterwards, you know, and now they're kind of a bit of a panic. And it's like, well, markets go up and markets go down. You know, you thought you were a genius for the last 10 years. Well, that'll work until it don't. I think we're at it don't for now, or at least it's going to be a lot harder. Anyway, Jim, we haven't forgot about you over there. If you have any charts or anything you want to share to talk about the VIX or whatever else you were talking about, feel free to do so.
I was I'll just use the charts you guys put up. I don't think it's necessary to put up all different charts that you guys already have up. But I would say one thing is that, you know, it's shocking to me that people don't realize the real reason behind the drops in the market. And I'm really shocked that a guy like Powell doesn't come out and say what it is. And again, you know, blaming the drop on a 2% Fed funds is a joke. The drop is all about valuations. When we're trading 2050 on Amazon and they're at 150p ratio or whatever joke it was at, as soon as people decide that things are not going to be as robust the next year, they're not going to pay the same PE ratio for the same dollar of earnings. And so what we did is we had a very overbought condition in the technicals because the 200-day average was way down and the price was way up, and you had a very big overvaluation. And then people decided that this year was not going to have anywhere near the earnings of last year. Last year was 20% jump in earnings because of the tax cut. And they decided that they don't want to pay the same amount of PE ratio. So obviously the market dropped to revalue the market. And that's all that's occurred so far. And I just think that guys like Powell assume that we never went to high school and we couldn't understand the concept of valuation. And so they come out with some very rudimentary talk about why the markets are going where they're going. But it really comes down to earnings and valuation at the end of the day. And I just wanted to add that people should, and then we can go into an oversold on valuations, which we did. Some of the PE ratios on the banks went down to like, what, 5 or 6? So again, just be aware that, you know, the market's valuating earnings and they are betting on future earnings. And that's what stocks are all about, betting on the future earnings, right? How much a company is going to make in the future. And the question is, how much do you want to bet? You want to pay 10 to 1? You want to play 100 to 1? You pay 150 to 1 on Amazon, that baby better not announce that they're going to be a 5% slow in the fourth quarter, because Tom, Dick, and Harry are going to say, whoa, I'm not going to pay that valuation. Boom, bring me down to 1400, 1500, 1600. At least it's somewhat reasonable at 90 to 1 PE. And even there is very high.
So it sounds like that's a fancy way of saying it might be a bit of a reality check with some of these people.
Of course it is. And that's why the options are so important, because when you're way up overvaluated and you got, King Tut's pile of money in front of you, for God's sake, do a collar, throw a couple of married puts in there. You know, you insure your house, you insure your car, you insure your life. How about insuring that freaking portfolio that's not made out of concrete? I mean, this is a moving, living animal. And if you haven't been around more than a week, you know, the prices can go up and down. By using the options in concert with your positions, you go to bed at night. You put a collar on Amazon at 2050, which I discussed in detail on my podcast. You go home and you sleep like a baby during this drop. You want to play, I don't want to spend any insurance money. I don't want to do anything, this and that. Well, then you live with what you got.
Gotcha. So by a collar, are you, can you flesh that out just for people who don't understand what that
yeah,
is?
Yeah, I mean, and I went over this when it was at 2050 on Amazon on the podcast. You know, you sell something out of the money, 2100, 2200. You take that call premium. When you sell a call, you're agreeing to sell Amazon. Yeah, you're agreeing to sell it above the market. So if it goes above your strike, you have an opportunity risk there. You can adjust the position by buying back the call and rolling it up if you'd like. But then you take that premium you received on the higher strike and you buy a put underneath the market at 2000 or something like that, or 1900. And then you've got insurance at the strike price, and any level underneath the strike price is protected by the put until it expires. And you didn't pay any out-of-pocket money, really. You took cash flow off the top and paid for the insurance on the bottom. You bracketed your equity. You know, if you had 50 grand in Amazon and it ran up to 500 grand and you didn't bracket it up there, you need your head examined, or you need more education, or you need something. But obviously, you know, you're dealing in things that can change dramatically. And using the options as a defensive tool, in my view, is common sense.
Well, let me ask you this, Jim. So you're saying if you, like, there's quite a few people still out there that still have these longer term positions because they won't, they're afraid to let go of them. But you're saying if you're already long and you have a tremendous profit, do you go in and do something like this? Or you're saying that if you want to go in tomorrow and trade on Amazon, you would do something like a collar on it?
Well, I mean, you know, the only reason I would collar anything as soon as I buy it is I don't want to lose a lot of money, and I want to know exactly what I'm risking when I walk in. So in other words, if I plan on holding on to Amazon for any length of time, I certainly don't want to hold it if it's going to go from 1600 today back down to 1200 without anything on it. So I'd probably come up with some kind of a strategy that brackets it, which means right. I have a pencil to make some money on Amazon, but I also have a floor underneath my equity because I don't want to lose all my money.
Right.
And so the bottom line is the only reason you do it down here is not because it's a fantastic time to do it. It's simply because you want to have some stability of your equity. And by limiting the upside and limiting the downside, that by definition will stabilize your equity from a disastrous drop like we just saw. It'll also take you out of the game if it's going back to 2000. But the likelihood of that happening right now is a little bit off the table.
So your profits are going to be limited, but you're saying given this environment, that's okay.
I guess what I'm trying to say is be realistic. When the markets are way up, it's all according to where you use your tool. Are you going to, like, I hate to bring this subject up, but are you going to start calling up Allstate after Katrina hits and start checking flood rates? You know, and that's
gotcha,
a good example,
gotcha.
Isn't it? There you go.
Yeah,
so, you know,
a great
you don't,
example.
Don't come to me and let's talk about defense when the we're sitting in ankle deep water. You know, that's not the time to put the defense on. Just like when it goes down to 1200, you think Amazon's a good idea? Well, and you don't want to buy it at 1300 or 1400, whatever it hit. Well, how do you like selling the 1200 put or the 1100 put or the 1000 put that is probably as fat as a pig on Thanksgiving, right? Well, that's the strategy to talk about then.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, you know, first you got to learn the tools, and then you got to use your brain on when to put in the tools. And when you use the tools, you're always working on probability. When the markets are way up, you're saying the probabilities are that we're in the neighborhood of the high. If the market tanks way underneath the moving average, I mean, the moving average is back to 1700 or whatever it is. When you go to 1400, it's oversold.
Yeah.
And so that's time you go into the tool chest and you start looking at strategies that are neutral to positive. So the first thing is learn the strategies. And the second thing is like Ray Dalio says, if you feel really good when the markets are up, you're probably going to get in trouble. And when it's way down and you're panicking, you're probably over, your asset allocation is probably out of line if you get real happy when it's up or real sad when it's down. And I think that's probably one of the truest statements I've heard. It's basically, it's an indictment of your asset allocation if your emotions get that crazy when it's up or down.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in this business, you don't feel too good for long. Whenever I'm feeling pretty smart, I know I'm getting ready to get my ass handed to me. So
time to hedge. Time to hedge.
Okay. Neil, we had forgot about you. The question of the week is, what do you think are the main reasons that most traders are not successful and consistent? What could the average trader do to improve consistency? And Neil, you may still be muted.
Yeah, Neil, you're muted.
Probably. This is the number one thing that I always see traders doing. My friends call me about this kind of stuff and it drives me completely insane. And what it is the market will be falling. The market will be falling. And they'll say, market's fallen. Is it time to buy? And I know what to say. And then, you know, market's fallen. Is it time to buy? Right. And then when the market market has absolutely just completely crashed, they'll say the market's completely crashed. Is it time to sell?
Yeah.
And you're doing the exact opposite of what you need to be doing. Okay. So just follow the trends. Don't put your stops too close. I have a trade calculator. I'm not trying to sell anything because I used to have a problem with my service where I didn't really know how much to tell people to put in a trade. So you got, let's say you have $100,000. I know a lot of people don't have $100,000, but it's a good number. You have $100,000. How much are you going to put in a trade? And people will say, oh yeah, I put $5,000 in per trade. Well, if you're buying a triple leveraged S&P 500 ETF, you know, on a perfect entry point on a trend, are you seriously only going to put in $5,000? Because I've had trades where we have 60% of our entire portfolio in a triple leveraged S&P 500 ETF, and we'll make something like 17% on that trade. And our account is up 8% in 2 weeks, right? So you got to manage the position sizes. And you can just look up percent risk calculator and you'll find some online ones. I made an installable one. And what it'll do is you use the technicals for your stop point. And then depending how volatile it is, that's the position size that you're going to put in. So if your entry point is perfect and it's real close to that stop, and it's not, you know, some sort of biotech that's going to fail an FDA trial and blow your whole account out, then you can put in a lot, you know, or you know what I mean? So trade the trends and quit trying to catch knives as they're falling down. I mean, for example, now it's not a really great time to put everything in. I mean, just trade the trends really is what it is. And a lot of people, I think their problem is that they just don't watch the market enough. If you want to trade, you have to watch the market every single day. Every single day, you got to watch the futures, the market, and the big ones like the S&P 500, bonds, gold, oil, that type of stuff. And if you watch it every day, then you're not going to miss out. But if you miss out from time to time, you'll panic and you'll try to make up for it. So kind of a long-winded response, but it's what I've noticed over the years.
Gotcha. Jim, same question.
I have no idea where the markets are going, and I've been doing this decades, and I work with a lot of stuff. So my suggestion is use those moving averages. You got a 50-day, 200-day. Those are as good as any to take a look at. When you get way above them, that means 20, 30, 40, 50% above them, obviously start investigating the sell side or the hedging side. If you get the same 20, 30, 40% underneath them, and some of these stocks do get. Micron Technology, I think, was one that used to always get about 30%, 40% above the average or whatever. Use that as an indicator to kind of look towards the other side. And if you're owning things that are on the wrong side of the moving average, it's probably not going to work out so good. And if the moving averages have crossed and they're going in a different direction, that's a kind of a not a good thing. And so I like to use the moving averages because, as I always say, you know, people lie, but price and time do not lie. They're just factual things. And they give us an idea of money flow. They're not a crystal ball, but I'd certainly rather be using the lanes of a highway to get somewhere than to be meeting people on the side going, what do you think I should do? Where do you think the road goes? You know, I think the moving averages are helpful to me to kind of smooth out some of the nonsense and the noise and give me some idea of what the potential market direction might be.
Yeah, good advice there, Jim. I like that a lot. Sometimes I like to just use a blank chart, but I will occasionally use moving average. I have a pattern, moving averages. I have a pattern called bow ties. And it's amazing. It always amazes me sometimes how simple something like moving average, like a simple moving average even, can keep you on the right side of the market. Speaking of that, if you go to DaveLander.com/CFN and you put your information in, I do have a market timing course that's free. And you can go in there and look at that. And the reason I'm bringing this up, in addition to how it relates to questions, is if you look on my website, there's Dave Lander's Weekly Charts, and you go to the free stuff. I have 19 resolutions for 2019. And the question, this week's question is, what's the reason people aren't consistent? And one of the big reasons, and we could talk about this for hours, but let me just try to stay within the confines of the show. And if you scroll down to these 19 resolutions on my website, one of them is accountability. And that's the hardest part, is we don't hold ourselves accountable. And I've told the story 1,000 times. I had one client, really good stock picker, does really well, prints money for a while. I almost get jealous of what he's doing. He's taking my watch list. It's almost like he's stealing stealing my bicycle, riding around the block and popping a wheelie when he gets in front of my house. He does so well. But then he tends to blow up a small account. It's kind of like a rinse and repeat because he gets a little too cocky and stops following the rules and so on and so forth. And I told him, I said, would you be willing to get your wife involved with your trading? Explain to her everything you're doing and then show her that you follow the plan and so on and so forth. And he said, no, that would end the marriage. So I know, in fact, I didn't realize it, but I actually wrote about it right here. So I think holding yourself accountable is important. Keeping it simple. Is it going up? Is it going down? Is it going down? Is it going sideways? Both of you guys here seem to sign on to the fact that if it's a trend, it's a trend. It is what it is. There might be good reasons why it shouldn't go up or down, but it is. And what is, unless you're, of course, Bill Clinton. So hold yourself accountable. Learn as much about your attitude and how important your attitude is. Your attitude is going to be far more important than your aptitude. I took a personality test. I scored a 0% in agreeableness. So that means I expect the market to agree with what I'm saying. So every time I find myself kind of fighting things a little bit, I remind myself of that. Just allow that stop to get hit. Take me out of positions. Then I can focus clearly on the next position. So be consistent. Keep it simple. Take your time. I think Neil pointed out, do your homework, which I thought was very important. I look at about 2,000 stocks every night, and I look at about 300 sectors and ETFs, combination thereof, to get a really good feel for what's going on. So do your homework. Keep it simple. Don't try to outsmart the markets. I like what Jim says too. You know, use a couple little moving averages. Is the slope of the moving average going up or down? Is there what I call daylight in between the price and moving average? Sometimes that in and of itself to keep you on the right side of the market. And not to pimp my free course here, but if you go to my website and there's a banner ad on the front page, or you go to daveleonard.com/CFN, you'll get access to it. But I have a market timing course where I use some really, really simple things in there, something I can teach you on a cocktail napkin that'll help to keep you on the right side of the market. And I think that just long-winded way of saying quite a bit, but I think to wrap it up, I think that people make it far more complex than it really has to be. Is it going up? Is it going down? Or is it going sideways? Those are the three things you have to ask yourself when you're contemplating a market, whether you want to get in or get out. All right, kind of Chief Foreman kind of wound up there. Neil, let's go back to you, Jim. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything, any other charts you want to share or anything else you want to tell us about Options Professor? You threw out some ideas. Sounds like, as we often say, a lot of moving parts in those options. So maybe we need some education to put those collars on and such. So go ahead.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, if you know how to use options effectively, they can be a very good tool because they can really help you with controlling the risk in your portfolio, which I think is very important. Just looking forward, you know, what I've been looking at is 1986 was the last time we had a huge tax cut. Okay, so I went back just to look at what happened after that occurred. I think that makes some common sense. Well, obviously we had a 1987 run-up, which was not dissimilar to what we had in 2018, right? And then we had a very substantial drop at the end of 87, which was very similar to the drop we had when? In December, okay? Maybe it didn't have that one-day capitulation type thing, but it certainly went down quite a bit. I mean, 29,000 down to what, 23,000 or whatever it did on the Dow? So the bottom line is what else occurred after this tax cut and after that big drop in the stock market? Well, I did notice that the banks did fairly well, and we see Citigroup today had much better loan demand and much better deposits, and it's being rewarded today with about a 5% jump. So keep your eye on the financials because they've gotten whacked. People who bought in January probably have given up because they've gotten whacked so hard, and when people give up is not a bad time to sniff around. Second thing is energy. Energy got whacked very, very hard, and some of the energy markets certainly have stabilized. There was one closed-end fund which was 15% discount to net asset value. That means that if you liquidated the fund and you bought it at the price that I'm talking about, it was a 15% discount to the value, and it was distributing over 9%, and the share price was at a 10-year low. And in the fund include some of the biggest oil companies around. That's something that you look at when things are going hairy because weird values occur on possibly good things at that time. So the energy looks interesting. And again, the other big story for me is that the dollar went up to 98. It dropped under 96. That's your first yellow flag. The dollar has problems. If it breaks under 94, that's going to be the red flag, and the dollar could accelerate to the downside, particularly if Jerome Powell is going to have his hands tied with regards to rates. And so if the dollar does roll over, it seems to me that things like gold might do pretty good. And we just had a big buyout of Freeport-McMoRan and Gold Corp, making Freeport McMoRan the top gold producer. So there are some things that could occur here, you know, on a sector basis, oil, banks, and the metals, particularly if the dollar does do a swan song. And of course, they tell me emerging markets do better if the dollar has a pullback as well. So, and again, it is losing altitude. It's not at 98, it's not at 97 or 96, it's in the 95. You break 94, going down towards 90 is not off the table. So that's my final thing. The other thing is, like I say, at the podcast every Friday, people have an opportunity to obviously get updates on my views and my observations. And of course, I invite them to do that.
All right. Good stuff. Lots of chew on there. Can you remember the name of that ETF?
Yeah, but I don't want to recommend it to people who I have no idea who they are. You know.
I got you. No problem. Cool. Okay, Neil, any closing thoughts? Anything else you want to tell us about TraderReview.net, the market, or if you're traveling the world, tell us about where you are, anything?
Yeah, sure. Is this chart showing up here now, the blue one?
Yeah.
Okay. This is something I look at maybe once a week or so when I'm sort of concerned things are getting overbought. And this is S&P 500 price to earnings ratio. And so a lot of people, they wonder, you know, should the market have sold off? You know, is it Trump? What happened? But really, if you look at this chart, the S&P 500 was almost 24, almost 25. And ignoring these spikes, this was the financial crisis and this was the internet bubble. So these are really outliers. They don't count. But if you go back all the way to the 1800s, we're actually tied for third place for the price to earnings of the S&P. So you kind of got to think to yourself, pretty sure I'm reaching a top here. There's no new form of communication like the internet that was just created. And so we've come down a lot on the S&P 500 PE. So I think this is a really great chart to keep a look at. And even if we go down to 15, I mean, stocks could drop 20% and, you know, we'd only be at the middle of the range. So that's a really good one to look at. And also, I think it's kind of fun to look, sort of be aware of things around you when you're trading. And I wanted to bring up this really funny article of Tim Cook. Almost looks like he's got a halo around his head. I don't know if they did that on purpose, but this was way back in February. And I thought, this is really strange. And it said, Tim Cook doesn't like that public companies need to report earnings on a quarterly basis. You got to think to yourself, wow, if a CEO of the largest company in the world is saying that, you know, they're getting pretty arrogant. And this was really the first crack in the market that I kind of noticed. And then, you know, he's at it again. I found another one here. You have no place on our platform, basically saying, you know, if you don't fit our agenda, you can't say what you want. And so when I saw this happen, I thought it's hilarious. And if you're ever at the airport, please just walk by the magazine aisles and you'll find some hilarious stuff. You really will. So,
hey, Neil,
I'd like to see.
Yeah, Neil, on Apple, don't you think it's just a simple case of they know that their sales of iPhones are going to shrink and it's 60% of their revenue and they don't want to advertise the fact that their big revenue generator is shrinking? And at $1,200 a phone, people are just, you know, not only do they already have a phone, but they're not going to pony up $1,200 more to check their blood pressure.
Yeah, I think so. Also, they said about the phones, they didn't want to report the phones, and that was just completely bizarre.
He knows what the numbers are going to be. He knows what the numbers are going to be. You know?
Yeah.
Obviously, he knows that. I mean, if somebody thinks that, you know, it's kind of like when your kid brings your report card home, you know, and he wants to hold his hand over it and says, just sign the bottom, you know, he obviously doesn't want
don't
you to
worry about it. You know?
Right. He doesn't want to see the grade. Yeah.
Hey, Jim, there you go again, confusing the issue with facts.
Yeah. I'm trying to serve coffee at a drunk's party, right?
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Right.
Okay. Just to wrap it up from my standpoint, DaveLander.com. Get to know me first. If you sign up either here or go to DaveLander.com/CFN, you'll have access to a free getting started course on trading. And you'll also get information on how you can get all three of my books for free. So get to know me. Come to a weekly webinar. All that information will be included. Just put your name in and I'll set you up with everything. I'll give you enough to keep you busy for a long time. And get to know me. I have a learning management system that I've built over the last year or so on my website, and I'm very proud of it. And so far, the feedback has been really good. So just get a taste of that system by signing up for the market timing course, which I think is very timely at this time. Just because we've gone down a lot doesn't mean that we can't keep going down. And right now, I think those major sales signals are still in effect. But check back often. You know, one day at a time is my mantra. I'll let you close up the show, David, but Jim and Neil, as always, always, I really enjoy having you guys on, and I really enjoy hosting. So thanks again to David Cosminer. And I always learn from you too. So thanks again for being here today. And I'll let Dave Cosminer wrap things up. Dave?
Thanks,
Dave. All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. So just a reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows. Please be sure to join us tomorrow for AYP, the 62nd episode of that. That'll be Tuesday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Oliver Schmalholz will be on. It's been a few months since he's been on, so he'll be back this one, as well as Christian Fromhertz and Mike Pisani. And so that's at 4:30 Eastern time tomorrow. And just want to thank my guests again for this week, Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com, Neil Batho of traderreview.net, and Dave Landry of davelandry.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.